Okay, good evening. It's Rabbi Feldman Shear. It's Tuesday night, September 9th. Tonight's Shear is sponsored by Alan and Rachel Friedman and family to commemorate the yard site of Rachel's father, Rabbi Baruch Meir Rabinowitz.
Good evening. I thought we'd talk a little bit about magic, the topic in this past week's Pasha, something maybe we sometimes aspire to. And the theme is one that's pretty packed in over there on Parsha Shoftim, that we have a number of Yisurim, which may all tie into one concept. And we have a broad imperative as well. That's just a little bit of a debate among the Rishonim, whether it counts it as a separate mitzvah. Some of the Rishonim do, the Rambam doesn't. And that's the mitzvah of Talmud Tia and the Semer Lekecha. Nobody's perfect, but we're told that we have to be perfect, whatever that means. And the Gemara understands that in the context of exclusive, that we are full with God, and that nobody else is allowed in. She says, how do you know, the Gemara says in Sachem and Kofi Gimel, how do you know that it's not appropriate to go consulting astrologers or the like to try to find out clues as to how to behave? Because Torah says, Tanun Tia. So is that meant to be an actual drasha? Is that really a mitzvah, so to say, in that sense? So the Rambam doesn't count it. And others do, the Ramban and the Bahag. And there's those who suggest that Rambam really agrees with it. There are technical reasons why he doesn't count it. Maybe he sees it as a kind of general concept that attaches to everything else within that parsha. But the thrust of it seems to basically be that we are told not to seek these, not to seek out these sources of authority, of guidance. And it's a topic of debate in general, both in terms of this and in terms of magic as a whole, as to whether this is a prohibition and it's something that potentially has value but we're told stay away, or is the whole thing a joke? So that was the view of the Rambam. And the Rambam was the rationalist, so here he took a stance that all of this is nothing, whether it's the astrology here or magic as a whole, this is all not for us, because it's not true, because it's all fake. So if it's fake, it's a waste of time, it's just stupidity, and it's not something that we're meant to be involved in. And others disagree. It's clear from the Ramban that he doesn't see it this way, and in the Ki Yosef, in his commentary to the Gemara, and many others basically argued that there's more in heaven and earth Maimonides and has dreamt of in your philosophy. It could be that there are things that exist that we don't know what they are, but maybe they really do have power. And maybe the whole point is not that it's a frivolous or stupid waste of time, but the point is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has an exclusive relationship, and maybe the rest of the world has this, but for us, it's not what we're supposed to do, and it's, in a sense, it's an insult to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're going to chase after these forces when we have the Torah, and that perhaps is the intent that the Gemara says in the Masechet Shabbos and the Rashba, a number of tshuvos about this. They state the Ein Mazel Yisrael, which could be read to understand that there is a concept of Mazel in the world, but that it's not for the Jews, that the Jews have the Torah and Mitzvot, and that's supposed to be their system, which allows them to rise above the forces of Mazel, which is why some posts can discuss maybe the whole expression Mazel Tov is really not appropriate. Maybe you have to figure out, and maybe it really does convey something a little bit inappropriate. It's a little bit of a discussion. Clearly, Klal Yisrael has not decided that way, but it's an interesting discussion why it is that we've adopted this expression when the Gemara says explicitly it's not for us, saying Mazel Yisrael. So that's a topic of analysis, but that's how many understood. And the Vilna Gaon, actually, who's often in the same camp with the Rambam and some of the philosophical attitudes, so here he's not, but Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, says that all the other Rishonim already hit the Rambam over the head on this one. That Rambam is not in the majority here, and that the view that there might be more that we don't know about, that even the Vilna Gaon also endorsed. Now, it doesn't mean that the astrology column in the newspaper has anything to it. It doesn't necessarily mean that anybody nowadays who knows how to read the stars. It means, in theory, there could be such a chachma, And the fact that the Torah is prohibiting it is not because it's nothing, it's because it's not for us. There are even those who go so far, Shambach, I believe, has a tshuva along these lines. Very striking idea. I'm not so sure that other poskim would necessarily accept this. Rav Sternbach, where he suggests that maybe you might say that it's kedai to visit an astrologer, even though here the Gemara says the favor is not to, says it's kedai because if you come with the right attitude, it could make you firmer. That if the hashkafa is that this exists, the Torah and mitzvahs is what helps me rise above it, so maybe it's good for you to find out what the stars have in store for you, and then you'll be even more inspired to follow the path of Torah and mitzvahs to overcome it. And be aware that, oh, this terrible misfortune is waiting for you, and since you're lucky, you have the avenue of Torah, take that instead to come above it. So again, I don't know if that's the kind of thing the other postman would agree. It sounds like it's explicitly against the Gemara. Gemara says you shouldn't go. So he's understanding you shouldn't go to make your decisions. But if you're going to inspire you to ignore it, then that's to overcome it. Maybe that is a reason to go. Some point out, Rabbi Yonah, also in his Shari Tshuva, also seems to adopt this as a mitzvah, Tamim Tiyahu Shem Elokecha, and he points to the well-known discussion the Gemara has in Brachas and Afiyah, the famous encounter between Yishayahu Anavi and Chizkiyahu HaMelech, which almost wasn't an encounter. The Gemara tells us that Kadosh Baruch Hu's Chachma here in trying to bring these two together, that there was a Navi and a king, and each one wasn't sure who should go to visit who, whose covet was more important. Whole discussion postkin based on that is the covet of the Navi more important than the covet of the Melech. So Kadosh Baruch Hu works it out. The Gemara Darshan from the pasuk Chacham Yodea Pesher, the Chacham of Kadosh Baruch Hu Yodea Lasos Pshar Ben Shnei Tzadikim. Kadosh Baruch Hu came up with a strategy to resolve this impasse between the two, that Chizkiyahu and Yishayahu weren't coming together. So he made Chizkiyahu sick, and Yishayahu and Navi came to be mevaker him, and he gave him mussar at that time. He said, "How come you didn't have children?" So Chizkiyahu said that I saw Ruach HaKodesh, that the children I would have had would not have been good people, would not have been upstanding citizens. So here Yeshayah gives him this famous line, says, that's not your problem. Says, B'hadi Kasid Rahman Allah Malacha, what's not your business to figure out God's secrets? Your job is my demystical Chayitus Chalam Eva, that which you are commanded, that's what you have to do, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu will figure it out. So Rabbi Yonah points to that Gemara as an indication that there's an issue to look into the future and to try to see what's up. So Nassim Gestetner has a truth about this in his Bahar Nassim, where he discusses what kind of a proof this is. Because he could say, well, maybe this is not a raya, that maybe the whole thrust of this Gemara is when it comes to a situation of a bitul mitzvah. That here, Chizkiyahu had a mitzvah of Puravu. He neglected his mitzvah because of what his future fortune tellers told him. So maybe that means that's the problem. But it's down to find out what the future holds, to make a decision. Maybe that's not a problem. So he has a whole discussion there where he suggests that the thrust of this Gemara is that really on the surface Chizkiyahu had a good point. That if his children were really going to be a detriment to the world, and maybe that was a good reason to hold back from Puravu, hold back from having children. But the whole message is that for Jews, of course, Baruch Hu is running the world, is running the world throughout, but he has a special Mazli Yisrael concept for the Jews. So therefore, we have the ability to rise above that. So yes, you were right, says Chizkiyahu, that if you knew your kids were not going to be good, upstanding citizens, maybe that's a good point. But you have to believe that you have the power to overcome this fortune telling. And because he didn't believe that, maybe that's what Rabbi Yonah was getting at. That's the araya of Tam Tiyam Hashem Elokecha. That is not just a general ideal, but that's an actual mitzvah sasei. And we're told to stay away from any type of exploration into that. So that's as far as this broad mitzvah sasei, which is connected to all the other Yisurim. But we know that the Torah then goes on to list a bunch of categories. Some of them are more unusual than others. Some of them we're less familiar with. Some of them are more familiar with. But they all draw on the same idea, which Ramchal talks about in his Derech HaChayim, and Malbim has a whole essay about that. The idea is that they represent another avenue that's not for us. Represent another koach that's not a kalach, maybe a kadosh baruch hu, again, in the view of most rishonim, that these powers may indeed exist. So fine, so they could exist. They're another way that a kadosh baruch hu runs the world. And we're explicitly told that if not something we're supposed to avail ourselves, we're supposed to avail ourselves of only a kadosh baruch hu's ways. So it raises the question, without getting into details, so what about the more Jewish magic? What about using Shem Hashem for whatever powers you can draw from that, or other types of techniques? Sorry? Well, the Urim, that's a mitzvah in the Torah. That's a type of nevuah, a type of hadracha from Hashem directly that we know about. But we have other types of activities which are associated with great Rabbanim, which sound a little bit like they're drawing on magical forces, so that we're attacking those who are not comfortable with that, which is understandable. And on the other hand, there are those who feel that even if they're supernatural, in a sense, but if they're drawing from Torah in some broader way, or they're associated with Torah in some broader way, then that's not considered a violation of Tam Tiyam Shemot Kafa. That's not considered looking somewhere else. That's all a part of, you know, using Shem Hashem. How can you say using Shem Hashem is going away from God? Maybe Shem Hashem is the essence of God. So even if it's not natural, and again, whether you take this position or not is a matter of debate, but the position exists that that's still in the spirit, literally, of Tam Tiyam Hashem Lo Kafa. So we have these prohibitions. So we have a prohibition of Mechashev. It's interesting, the phrase Kishuf. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin has an expression that it has Mechashin from Aliyah Shalmala. So how do you translate that word, Mechashin? It's a word that sounds like a couple of Aramaic words. So Rivash has a tshuva where somebody asked him, how should we translate this word? But on the one hand, we know you have Ede HaChasha, if you have two witnesses who come and contradict another two witnesses, so that word means contradiction. So maybe it means it's a contradiction to God, that God has his Mahalach and you're using another Mahalach, and maybe that's what the Gemara means, that using these magical techniques is a contradiction to God's message. The other possibility that Rivash considers in this tshuva is that we also find it has a connotation of weak. If that same word is used, kachosh means to be weak. So maybe it means that it weakens your relationship with God, that if you believe it, okay, I can hedge my bets. I'll put on tefillin for one purpose, and I'll do other magical things to cover up all the bases. So I'll have another approach also. So then you focus on God is not as strong. You have other relationships as well. So maybe that's what it means, that it weakens it. So either it overtly contradicts it, one take, or we can get two different takes on the same phrase in the Gemara, all addressing what this idea is. So when we talk about Kishuf, so Kishuf, some of the Rishonim understand that to be a general term in reference to magic as a whole. And the problem is that if you're the Rambam, so you don't really believe that magic exists, so you believe that it's all a fakery, so then you're basically saying that you're basically saying that that's what it means. It means to fake magic. So other Rishonim have a definition of Kishuf, meaning to do actual magic, and then they have Ma'onein, which means to fake magic. So with the Rambam, you have a harder time having different concepts because you believe the whole thing is fake. So other Rishonim have two different concepts. You have a prohibition to be involved in actual sorcery, and you have a prohibition to be involved in pretending to do sorcery. If you know that you're not really pulling off magic, but you're pretending, so then that's also a prohibition. It's a separate prohibition according to all the other Rishonim. And the Gemara talks about what's called Achizas Einayim, which in not direct translation, but in modern day language would probably mean sleight of hand. Literally, Achizas Einayim means you grab the eyes. You do something, you move so quickly so that you able to overcome the power of vision because you pull some stick with your hands. So that's, we call that in English sleight of hand. The Gemara calls that achizas einayim. So pretending to do magic, that has this prohibition. So that, if you look into the sources, look in the Rishon and Achron who discuss this, they feel this is a horrible thing to be involved in such behavior. It is both a direct prohibition of a larger Kisho family, and on top of that, it's got the added element of sheker. So you're fooling people, you're acting in a dishonest way. And it's you also talk about Lefneiver, Loshita and Mishra, you're misleading people. So all of that, we feel this is an especially egregious activity. So then the question comes, so then what does that say about modern day magicians? So does that mean that therefore someone who's going to engage in a magical performance is not only a violation of general kishuf issues, but is a violation of all of these extra issues that the Rishonim bring up, the issue of looking at even the Sheker and everything that's totally anti-Jewish that they get very upset about? So not necessarily. This is actually a big shiloh among the Achronim, that there were those who thought that magical acts are very inappropriate, and they're either a direct Issa Deraisa or they are within the broader category of an Issa Deraisa. The Chayadim has a whole discussion about this, how he's very opposed to this. And some of the later Achronim weren't so sure. Some of the later Achronim thought that there might be where to be lenient, and Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that wasn't published in Igros Moshe, if I'm not mistaken. It's published in the Gutta journals called Amma Torah, where he talks about this. And the Shanzer Rebbe, Shanz Klausenberger Rebbe, has a tshuva about this also in the reactive. And the issue is that a modern-day magician is not necessarily trying to convince anybody that he has magical powers. It's just the opposite. He calls himself an illusionist. He calls himself an illusionist means you are announcing to the world that what you're doing is an illusion. So a modern day magician, you have a David Copperfield or somebody like that. So if you really thought that he had magical powers, he would be offended, because he doesn't want you to think that he has magical powers. He wants you to realize that he's a normal human being, and somehow he's such a chacham, he came up with a way that you can't figure out what he did. So that's a pure intellectual exercise. And again, as indicated by the very name illusionist, they announce to you that I'm pulling off an illusion, I'm doing something which is really based on normal behavior, and somehow you can't figure out how I did it. So there were Achronim who understood that that's not at all in the concept of magic. That's, even though we call it magic as a performance, but that's something that's really an intellectual exercise, and that there might be a lot more room to be lenient about it. So Rav Moshe, in this unprinted tshuva, so he entertains that far, and he sounds like he's leaning that way. For whatever reason, he's not ready to paskin in this tshuva. He says, I haven't actually paskin l'maisa, but if somebody were to ask me l'maisa, I would try to avoid answering. he doesn't have an actual conclusion there, but the svara is very clearly expressed there. And there were other poskim who did say this more clearly, that they felt that this was a svara that made some sense, and you certainly do have religious magicians who work off this kind of logic. Some of them have a shita that you reveal one trick. You reveal one trick, and that shows that the whole thing is not magic, and then you don't have to reveal anything else. It shows you what the whole pursuit is, and that way make it permissible. That's how some understand. There are those who say, well, maybe it's mutter for adults, because adults know there isn't any real magic involved. But maybe for children, maybe it's a bigger problem, because maybe you can have this over the children. They'll think it's real magic. So maybe we should say that it's permissible for adults, it's not permissible for children. One of my friends once pointed out that goes against the famous commercial. I mean, the conclusion is, silly rabbit, tricks aren't for kids. Tricks are only for adults, and maybe kids shouldn't be exposed. So there were those who felt that way. And there are others who don't worry so much about that. Even they feel that even the children who are old enough to enjoy the show, they already understand that it's all a game, and they also don't think that there's some real dark force that's actually being marshaled here in order to make this happen. They're also trying to figure out how he's doing it. So that's how a lot of contemporary posts can assume that maybe we don't necessarily see this activity in the category of magic, despite the name, and despite the fact that it sounds very much like what's described by the Rishonim. Nonetheless, you do have this attitude among many poskim that it's not necessarily a problem, neither for adults or for children. And there are those who those took a different attitude. Then we also have the prohibition of kosem. Kosem in modern Hebrew means a sorcerer. So what does that mean in terms of all these magical concepts? So in usage, it really refers to a fortune teller, so somebody who's going to set up a tarot card table, one of these types of displays where Gemara talks about moving bones around, different animal parts, putting up a whole show so that people will come and you'll tell them what's going to be. So that's That's also a problem. So we have the problem of you're going to consult astrologers, as I mentioned before. Now we also have the problem of you're setting up shop as a fortune teller. That's a whole different type of problem on the other side of the equation. That's what's generally understood as the issue of kosing. We also have an interesting prohibition that's called nefesh. And nefesh is also, again, from the Pesukim in Parashas Shoftim. And nefesh basically means to be suspicious. And the Gemara says that if you take an attitude that you're going to make your life's decisions based on signs that don't have anything to do with anything. So you say that, if you say if it rains I'm going to take an umbrella, so then that's not irrelevant. That's you taking an umbrella because you don't want to get wet. But if you say it rains I'll buy this stock, and if it doesn't rain I'll buy that stock, and there isn't, it's not umbrella stock, there's no connection between the rain and the umbrella, so then that's a prohibition on the surface, a prohibition called nefesh. Now the question is the parameters of that actually kind of goes downhill from there. That's what the prohibition is in theory, but there actually are a lot of limitations that you find that the Gemara and the Rishonim and the Poskim seem to actually say it applies in more limited circumstances than it sounds. First of all, the Gemara has this expression which is hard to understand, and the Rambam passes like it and the other Rishonim attack him for it. The Gemara says in Chulin that who is our role model, so to speak, of Nefesh? Says, sorry? Exactly. I think it says that Kol Nefesh, Eino Keliezer, Eved Avram, is not Nefesh. That if you want to raise the standard of Nefesh, so it's got to be like Eliezer. So Eliezer had this whole test where he looked for a Shidduch for Yitzchak and he had the test with the water. So the Rambam, Paschim's like that, and says, oh, you see, that's an example of Nefesh, Eliezer out of Rambam. And the Rambam gets very upset with him characteristically, right? He says, that's totally wrong. He's completely misunderstood the Gemara. And he says, because the problem that we have intuitively with that is that that doesn't sound like Nefesh at all. He's not saying a random sign that it's, if the sun comes up this way. He's saying that I'm looking for a person who's a person of Chesed. So somebody who's going to treat me nicely, that's the person who I'm looking for. So why should that be at all problematic? That should be totally appropriate. So some of the Rishonim explain, like the Rav as opposed to the Chulin, gets into this discussion also, that the point of the Gemara is not to say that Eliezer was in violation of Nefesh. Would it matter if he was, by the way? We don't know, because Eliezer wasn't Jewish. So is there a prohibition of magic for Bnei Noach is actually not so clear. There's some who thought that there is a prohibition, and some who thought there isn't a prohibition. So we don't know if we're terribly concerned about the idea of whether Eliezer would have engaged in magic, but it still doesn't seem to make sense that this is a prohibition. So they explain that the point of bringing up Eliezer is to say that if a person wants to violate Nefesh, what he's got to do is he has to be totally dependent on the sign. That if he says, I will totally follow this sign one way and that sign the other way. If it rains, I will buy the stock no matter what. If it doesn't rain, I will definitely not buy the stock. So then that becomes a problem. But if he's factoring in a bunch of other things and he says, well, I'll take a look at how it's doing and I'll ask some friends and I'll see if it's raining. So then if it's part of a number of other factors, then you find that it may not be prohibited. So maybe that's what the Gemara is saying. That's not something that Rishonim understand, that if you're taking Eliezer's approach and you're completely married to this sign, then it becomes problematic. And the truth is, when you focus on that part of it, so then we can understand a little bit of the criticism against Eliezer also, that even though Eliezer's test worked out well and was logical, it made sense, but still to say that he's 100% committed, this is the be-all and end-all. If she gives the water, so then we know she's an Eishes Chesed, and if she doesn't, then she isn't. So then that's problematic. If you would have said, I'll look out to see if she is nice to me, and then if I see that, I'll look for other signs, I'll see other things she does, or I'll still keep an open mind, that would be a different story. But to say, I'm going to pick this as the sign, and that's going to be the whole be-all and end-all, that's a problem. It's a good Moshe Haskel in general, because very often we attach certain needles to certain behavior, and we say, okay, either forget, if he's a nice guy, he'll do this. If he doesn't do this, he's not a nice guy. And there's a lot that's not so healthy about that type of thinking, and maybe that's what the Gemara is getting a little bit of a criticism really as to whether it was actual nefesh or not. But to say that everything is going to revolve around this one indication is not always necessarily the best way to go. It had a lot of sense to it and it worked out, but it has aspects of nefesh to it. And also here the Rishonim is saying that if you're totally committed to your sign based on this, That's a problem. They also feel that in order for you to violate this, you have to actually say it out loud. You have to express that you're relying on this line. If you're just thinking about it, you don't actually say it. So for some reason, that's not necessarily a problem in terms of nefesh. They point out that there are things in our tradition which do sound kind of nefeshish. On the one hand, we have a concept of simon coming up to Rosh Hashanah. So I have a notion the Gemara tells us that Shimon and Milsa, certain things that we do that are considered to be a positive simon, and that sounds a little like nefesh. And the Gemara talks about all kinds of other rituals in various contexts. The Gemara in Sefer Zoharias talks about when they used to anoint a new king, they would go to a river and they would anoint him next to the river, and they would say, just like this river is flowing in a strong, powerful way, so too his royalty should go in a strong, powerful way. So is that a problem with nefesh? How does the Gemara allow that? So the Rishonim, the Meiri, and others talk about this, and they say, first of all, the difference between Shimon and nefesh. Nefesh is totally random, and Shimon sometimes is based on past performance, and even though we don't understand the connection, but we see that this has had a certain relationship that we don't understand, that we're allowed to continue looking at that relationship. But also, there are those who understand, like the Meiri says over there, that the notion of, let's say, the king being anointed by the river, it's not just trying to say that, oh, if you do it like this, then he's going to have a good reign. If you happen to have this present when you anoint him, then things are going to work out well. No, it's saying that this kind of imagery is inspiring. So when you're starting off his reign, you want him to be inspired, and that's very practical. That's not about anything supernatural. That's about the power the imagery has, and we believe that imagery is valuable. So you find this idea also, that there is a minig that some have. You don't hear about it too often, but there is a minig that's in literature that people remark with only to get married in the first half of the month. That's what we call the second half of the month. It's called the Bechoser Halavana, and when the moon is getting smaller, it's shrinking, so that's the second half of the month. So there were those who had a minig not to get married then, to only get married in the first part of the month. And you find this in the commentaries of the Shulchan Aruch in the context of your day, in the context of the Hilchos Kisuf. And there it's allowed. We're told that you're allowed to have this minig. You're allowed to be choshesh to this. And those who aren't so excited about it, there's a number of tshuvas about it in the literature. So the question becomes, so why is this permitted? So again, I think the idea is, as they explain, that it's not that, oh, if you get married in the first half of the month, it's going to be a good marriage, and if you get married in the second half, it's not going to be good. So the idea is that there's an imagery of growth and of improvement that comes from a growing moon, and we like to have that inspiration. If we don't have it, so it's not the end of the world, but this is also something which has a certain motivating factor. So there are tshuvas about this, Yehuda Asad, and there's tshuvas Yehuda Yala, and others discuss the scenario. Let's say you have somebody who has everything set up. He's got the catering hall picked out. He's got the invitation sent out. He's got the photographer. He's got the florist. He even picked the girl. He's got everything all set up. And then after it's all sent out, somebody says to him, oh, you know, it's the second half of the month. You're not supposed to do that. He says, oh, I didn't realize that. So he calls up the caterer, and he cancels, and he cancels the florist and the photographer, and he dumps the girl, the whole thing. He says, it's not gonna work. So is this the right attitude to take? So the Yehuda Yala says, not only is it not enough of a reason to do that, but if you do that, then it becomes a serious problem. To say that, oh, I'm going to make all my decisions based on this, that it becomes real nefesh. Then it becomes a real problem. If it's just one of the things that you factor in, so I have two dates I could pick, I have all the other details all fall into place equally, and the catering hall tells me they have one date on the 8th of the month and one date on the 17th of the month, okay, so I'll take the 8th of the month. But if I have to turn my whole world upside down in order to fix that, in order to get it to match, so then that's real nefesh. Then it really becomes a problem. And even those opinions in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's in general permissible, it's not going to be permissible if you take that type of an attitude. So not only is it not enough of a reason, but then that really flips the whole thing into a serious problem. As far as the simon.
Yeah.
Right, so again, it's the kind of thing that we may have some inspirational value, or maybe even more than inspirational value, but to base your decisions on it purely becomes dangerous. Hi.
Truth in Israel,
You mean the astrological signs? Yeah, you see those in a lot of places. They had to have them actually in YU. And if you come into the base manager's building, they had it on the floor and they put a carpet on top of it. but there are a lot of Jewish places where you find that. We do believe there is some old significance to these different symbols. Whether it means your life is really ruled by the stars is a different story. But these symbols are old and are common to our culture and to many other cultures. There definitely are a lot of history behind them.
Well, everything was
read in the stars. Right, so again, this notion that there could be something to be read is something that the majority of Rishonim acknowledge. You go back to the whole story of Pyro and Moshe, where they were dealing with. So the assumption is, so the Rambam would read it that they were faking it, they had some kind of shtick that they were pulling. But other Rishonim understand that no, they were really able to do this. They could really turn the staff into snakes and vice versa. So they had these towns. Whether he counts them, I don't remember. I think he probably does. So then the question is, how does he understand Kishuv differently than the Mone? So that's the problem. But still, each one is a different type of behavior. Hi.
We have Raziel Malach, we have Sefi Yitzhira, many other Spartans.
Right. So that goes back to the question mentioned before, the idea of the more Jewish supernatural things, so the things that are associated with Kabbalah, not associated with Kabbalah. So again, there are certainly those who don't want to be involved in those things, those who feel there's a serious problem with that. And there are many Jews who are comfortable with it based on the assumption that, again, even if it's supernatural in nature, it's coming from our...
But the astrological aspect,
the right, that's really at the heart of this Machlokas Rishonim. That's why a lot of the Rishonim felt that there was strong. Yeah, the Rambam has to reread all the Gemaras, basically. Which... Well, that's how many understand.
In the century, a lot of this started to occur, and so it got out of hand. You have many different ways that would lead in many different definitions, like even palm tree.
Right, that's just part of it. Part of it also has to do with different understandings of nature and reality as time goes on. And that maybe even the Gemara is using different types of terminology, which nowadays is described in scientific terms. I think Ryan Soloveitchik was quoted as saying that when the Gemara talks about Shadim, so he understood that as germs. Germs. As germs. As biological agents. Things that we now use scientific terminology for. It's a question how to read a lot of these things, which is out there. Right. So that's mentioning that there is also this idea. And so to a certain extent, we certainly find a lot of support for that. I mean, the question is if you become obsessed with that and if you say this is going to be the key factor overwhelming everything else, then the postal right, that could become a serious problem. And that kind of shifts it away from what it's meant to be. It's an interesting question. So what about, let's say a person wants to flip a coin. Says, I'll decide, I'll flip a coin. If it's going to be heads, I'll do one thing. Tails, I'll do another thing. So Rav Sternbach has a tshuva about this also, and it's a little easier to relate to than the first tshuva about the astrologers. He says that when a person flips a coin, he doesn't think that, oh, if it's heads, that's a sign from heaven that he should do this. And if it's tails, it's a sign from heaven he should do the other thing. It means that he doesn't want to make a decision. he doesn't want to think about it. He wants to just pass off the decision to some random factor. So he wants to make a random decision. So he's letting the coin make the random decision. So that's not necessarily any type of a superstition. It's not necessarily a violation. This is just a way of making a random decision. So they also point out, that's why we also find in the Tanakh, and acceptable now also, a person wants to use a goro, a person wants to make a lottery. He has to divide land, he has to divide property, he has to pick who gets to go, whatever it is. So that's not done with the intent that, oh, whoever wins the lottery, that'll be a shemir from Shemayim that this is true. It's done because we want a random conclusion, and this is a way to do it. You want to be fair. You have two teams. You can't show favoritism to one of the others. You pick flip a coin, so you'll be neutral. So then that doesn't necessarily involve any of these concepts. Now we do find that there are gorolos that we use that are clearly more supernatural in nature. And we have the idea of goro hagra, which many spectacular stories have been told about. The book that Tzaddik in Our Time has one very famous story. It's a book about Rabbi Levine. Yeah, it's definitely quite a story if you want to take a look there. There are many other stories that we know the idea involves. There are different versions of it, but essentially the idea involves opening a Tanakh and picking a pasuk and looking to that pasuk for guidance. So if you do it seven times, you open it seven ways. I think that's the way it's described in that book. But essentially it means opening a Tanakh and looking to a pasuk for guidance. And there are many fascinating stories people have of Hadrach that they've gotten that way. And this has a distinguished lineage to the Gra and before, and the fact is it goes really to Chazal. We find that in Shas that they didn't have printed Tanakh then, but there are many stories, such as we find also in the Tisha B'Av Gemaras. Maybe you had a chance to look at it, where Tisha B'Av is also Daf Yomi now, so we see it there also, that people, if they were looking for some type of simon, they would stop a child in the street, and the child presumably learning Tanakh, and they say, Tzukayah, tell me what pasuk you're learning. And so that's a way of essentially opening up a Tanakh and pointing randomly. And they get the pasuk that the kid was learning. They'll say, oh, that's a simon, that such and such. So there is a distinguished lineage to that whole approach, going back all the way to there, and then later on associated with the Gra. And there are those who, again, assume that even though it's supernatural in nature, this also involves turning to the Torah for guidance and would therefore be less offensive in that sense. Right, so that's the same idea. That's the idea, he called Hasidim, the grower probably be offended. You know, the idea that's associated with his own grown, but really again, it goes back to Shas, this whole idea of grabbing a child for telling what you're learning. It all goes back to this notion that you can draw some guidance from the psukim. That's one of the examples of that. Right, so I think you find that in a couple places in Chazal. I tell a story there where Moshe Feinstein was trying to decide whether, when he was going to leave Europe, was trying to decide whether he should go to Eretz Yisrael or whether he should go to America where Ivan Kabler had gone and had started rebuilding Torah there in the wilderness of America. He opened the Tanakh and he saw a pasuk that Moshe was told, go join Aaron in the wilderness. So he went to America to go be with Ryan Kala. He went to Haran. Okay. His name was Shlomo. His name was Yaakov? Could be, okay.
I think the
Grizz
also did it.
Okay, I'm sure if it was good enough for the Grizz, it was good enough for the Grizz. Sure that tradition was certainly respected. So again, it has a distinguished lineage, and there are those, it's talked about a little bit in the literature. There's a sefer, Yaakov Hillel, the famous Mekubal in Eretz Yisrael, there's a sefer called Tanin Tia. He talks a lot about these Inyanim. He also mentioned before of Nelson Gestetner and his Shuvas. He has a lot of letters back and forth between the two of them. In the Shulis Baruch Nashrin, and also in the Sefer Talmud Tia, he goes through a lot of these things. He talks a lot about the Gra HaGra and to what extent it's appropriate or inappropriate. Just to quickly mention some of the other ideas, and we'll stay out of time, but there are other ideas in the Tzukim as well. Sholol V'Yidoni, V'Daru Shalameson, so those sound like the same thing, and they're actually not each other. That you would think that consulting the dead sounds like Darish Lamason, that's what the word sounds like. So actually the Gemara says that's something different. Darish Lamason is this whole thing people had where they would fast and they would go to a cemetery and they would sleep in the cemetery, and through doing that they would hope that the Ruach HaTumo would somehow settle on them and would give them some kind of power. So that's not recommended. And then there's the idea of Sholov Yedoni is really what Darish Lamason sounds like. So Olov is consulting the dead, trying to raise the spirits of the dead like we know Ov, consulting Ov like Shol, and that is also problematic. So that is again an issue where we find very different practices, because we know by the Hasidic culture to go to a kever and to communicate in some way is very much a part of the tradition. So the Minchas Elazar has a Nicholas is one of the greatest Chassidish poskim, so the Makachi Rabbi, so in his Chuvas he talks about this, and he doesn't think it's a foul. He thinks that this is not that you're asking the Mason for something. It's a way of using it as a Me'ilut Yosher, we say a way of communicating with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. In general, the whole issue of communicating with angels, using them as intermediaries, is problematic. It's some Sofer has chuvos about that, about our davening of the Yom Narayim, and about various issues that come up in that context. So it's a kind of a delicate theological balance between to what extent how to do this right and how not to do this right. And that's part of the problem. It goes to this issue of what does Darash Al-Nation Sholal V'yadoni mean. So of course Ben Chazal took the attitude that it's not a problem. It's not the atmosphere, it's not the attitude that one takes, that he's necessarily praying to these people or consulting them directly. And he feels that it's like Kiyum and Kibbut Av'ein. When it goes to their parents' kever, so that's part of the tradition to do that. So it's both Kibbut Av'ein and not also, and not appropriate, and the distinguished part of the Hasidic tradition. And
doing what?
So that's also right. That's also part of the question. So what are you doing? So you have to be careful. You're not davening to them. You're davening through them, perhaps. I don't remember if he spelled out so clearly exactly how to do it, but he's clearly responding to something that others felt was inappropriate. And I remember I was once talking to a friend about how do you feel about to go visit the Kvarim, and he responded that with Hasra or without Hasra. that those who feel it's a good idea, those who feel that it's a serious prohibition, depending on the attitude that you take. So it's one of these areas throughout you find this discussion where we have really a careful tightrope between a very revered part of Jewish tradition on the one hand, in some circles, on the other hand, something that others might consider to be really theologically problematic. It's just interesting to know.
Communication, even the Osrim, according to the Osrim, they forbid talking to the Neshama of the Mishnah, or they only it's only forbid asking them to do something to you.
Probably asking them to do something or actually trying to communicate, maybe even that's even more, trying to have a discussion with the spirit. And I think everyone has the idea that they're thinking about the Starim and that they're on some level communicating, the actual attempt to try to have a back and forth.
If the Nifter takes the initiative,
that's impressive. No Isser on the Nifter.
Right.
Oh, the Nifter has no Isser in any way.
I'm coming out of a dream, and Aaron comes to him in a dream, and Rebbe comes to him in a dream. There's obviously no Isser there. But then there is an issue in you know, Bakashas Kalom, getting an answer in a dream.
Right, so I would talk about dreams because we're almost out of time. Dreams a little bit. No, dreams is an interesting discussion of itself. Maybe we'll push dreams off to a different because there's a lot to talk about as far as dreams. So maybe we'll come back to that because you're right. The dreams clearly have a whole different aspect to them. So maybe we'll save dreams.
Darish
Lamation, he wants this guy. He wants to be affected by whatever spirit is there. So he's going through this whole ritual to try to attract the spirit. So he could argue whether there is a spirit or there isn't a spirit, whether there are demons or whatever that means. But everyone's going to agree that this is outside of that. This is somebody who's actively seeking that type of spirit to come on top of them. That's what the Torah is discussing. So separate from that question, we could ask, are there... Well, that's prohibited. That's the problem with Darish Lamation. But the question is, so we think now we're not going to do that, but then how far are we going from that? We're saying that there was no spirit there at all, there's no such thing. Or maybe there are, and that's what they're worried about. You know, to avoid going Bechlal might be an extreme interpretation of Darish Lamation. It's also interesting to note that it's part of this whole machlokas between the Rambam and the other Rishonim, as far as whether you believe it has a power to it or not, that it's kind of surprising. You see, many posts can point out, because we have this ingrained attitude against all these practices, but many posts can point out that most of these Yisurim don't necessarily apply, they're not Yehar V'Yavor. they don't necessarily apply Makom Pituach Nefesh. So if somebody has some illness that he feels could be cured by some type of magical technique, so in most cases, unless it involves what is Zara, sometimes that's a problem. What is Zara is a more serious issue, which is a Haralei Avla. But if it doesn't involve idolatry, so you find many poskim pointing out that if a person in theory could be cured by magic, so then... Right, so that gets into this whole Rambam other Rishonim thing, so the discussion is not going to get off the ground for the Rambam. But but if you believe that it exists, so no one's not allowed to do it, so then you maybe should be mutter b'makom pikuach nefesh, which is again a jarring idea because we're so ingrained this is not for us. But then you might find in moments of life or death crisis, all of a sudden it's mutter. So that's a surprising idea. Moshe Feinstein and before him the Binyan Sion both had shuvas about hypnotism, because hypnotism seemed like something spooky. So they both took the same attitude. It was called magnetism in the days of the Binyan Sion. He thought Binyan Sion was one of the rebbeim of the Rishon Shmuel Erz. So that's what they had termed it at the time. So they both took the same attitude that this is not kishuv at all, that this is a real science, that this is a part of what doctors will tell you how the mind works, and certainly for healing purposes, certainly for anything constructive and medicinal, but certainly matzir. Most of all, if you want to do it as entertainment, then it becomes inappropriate for other reasons. Then there's other issues of covered up rias and the late honest that may not be so recommended, but for any type of medical purpose, they both agree that this is not something that's within the category of kisha, but even things that may be within the category of kisha. So again, when it becomes kuruf nefesh, the discussion could change a little bit, and unless we're dealing with idolatry, which there are techniques that are talked about nowadays that some posts can have termed idolatrous in nature, and that gets into a little bit of discussion. It's certainly a more serious issue. There is more to say about this, but we are at the time of the matter, so we'll stop here. Again, maybe sometime in the future we'll revisit the topic of dreams and related issues.
And what was it that Khalid and Kumadid,
which had happened? So, right, so that expression we certainly find in the halakhic literature. So, again, this idea of